Welcome to the Indian Music Charts Podcast. This is the show where we break down the hits, analyze the trends in the Indian music industry. This week, we're discussing the chart-breaking hit from Diljit Dosanjh and Sia, Hus Hus. This track has done something that is extremely rare for any international collab, that's breaking into the top 10 on the charts. What does it have that others don't, including recent collabs by Diljit himself? Like Palpita with Camilo, Shoffer with Tori Lanez, and the Anne-Marie featuring remix of Peaches. Well, we will dive into just that, but first we will be looking at the key moments on the charts this week.
And as always, since we're back after a break, there's lots of action to talk about. Last week, we published a short from a previous episode that talked about how sometimes the number one song isn't always necessarily the most popular track in the country. And that was in reference to Apna Banale from Bhediya disappearing from the charts because Zee Music Company's catalog was removed from the platform. Well, some of their catalog is back, including Apna Banale, and it's returned a few weeks ago. And this week, it's moved back up from 58 to number 41. We'll see how far it goes and how much more of the catalog returns. There's still some tracks missing, as we said. And number 63 is Arjun Veli from Animal by Manan Bhardwaj and Bhupendra Babal. That's on T-Series. And number 39 is the biggest climber of the week, up all the way from 121. It's Mamadura from Jigar Thanda Double X.
I love all these names.
Amazing.
This is what I live for.
Yeah.
Such a heavy read.
That's composed by Santosh Narayanan. It's got vocals by Dee and lyrics by Vivek. And that's out on Think Music. Moving into the top 10 is another track from Animal, moving up from number 24 and number 9, it's Satranga. This one is composed by Shriyash Puranik and it's sung by Arijit Singh. And the lyrics are by Siddharth Garima. And number 5, as you mentioned, is Hus Hus by Diljit, Sia and Greg Kirsten, which is on Warner Music. And at number 1 for the 4th straight week is Tu Hai Kahan by Aur. Now, as you mentioned, Hus Hus is moving up the charts. It's cracked the top 5, which is probably something that's not happened, I think, with an international collab.
Top 5? I don't think ever, right? Top 10, yes. Once before?
Well, I mean, if you count like the Sidhu Steel Bangles, you know, Merena, which was sort of like hit the top 10 for a week or so. But this one seems to have legs. I mean, it's been slowly moving up the chart and it's been consistently been in the top 5, even on the daily chart. And it's already reached number 1 app on Apple Music, which tends to sort of be a little bit of a, quicker as far as, you know, songs tend to reach number 1 there first and then slowly progress on Spotify, probably because, you know,
the bases are quite different.
The bases are quite different. And, you know, especially when it comes to Punjabi music, Apple Music seems to be quicker on the uptake. And then that, and Spotify has a larger audience, so it takes a little more time to get there. But, I have my own theories of why this track has managed to do so well. But I'd like to hear what your theories are also. And we can sort of hark back to the piece that you wrote for High Wire, which also we discussed in an earlier episode. But I think now we can talk about it in the specific lens of, you know, international collaboration.
Yeah. You know, so the piece that I wrote for High Wire very specifically looked into, you know, international collaborations with Indian artists and, you know, what does it take for them to be meaningful in the sense that not only are they great pieces of music, but they also actually perform really well in terms of numbers. And we'll get into it, you know, in detail, but honestly, the long story short of it was it has to be original content. And let me kind of explain again, right? Like everything that has released in the last year that has done really well has always been new music, right? It's not a remix. It's not just like a hook that is added somewhere. It's equal parts, both artists, right? You know, you spoke about Merana, you know, another track that did really well was, you know, Kashmir's track with MC Stan. That one also did quite well on the charts. What they all have in common is that they are new original music and they're not remixes. And this kind of goes into this aspect of thinking about demand, right? What demand exists? And there is a demand for new music all the time, you know? And there is honestly no demand for remixes. There's honestly very little demand for remakes. I think there are some examples of good remakes that have come out this year. I think Wojcicka was one of them, and that also did really well. But again, it was redone in such a way that it was pretty much a new track. And, you know, all of this aside, also, I think this track, it sounds like a Diljit track. It does also sound like a Sia track, but to me it sounded more like a Diljit track. You know, Punjabi music is definitely having its moment. Like when we did the half month, sorry, no, I meant half yearly review, we actually said that if there is a sound to this year, it is Punjabi hip hop, right? Although it's Punjabi pop, but you know, it has been the language that has been doing really well this year. So there's also that to factor in. So those are my theories. And you know, I know you also covered collaborations, you know, through your work in the past. You obviously observed and seen a lot of international artists working with Indian artists. You've seen the outcome of it. So, you know, just with that historic context, what do you think was different about this track?
Yeah, but when just taking this track, just looking at it alone, I feel that it really sounds like a Sia track itself, and at the same time, it doesn't seem any less of a Diljit song. And the reason why it sounds like a Sia track is because the producer is Greg Kurstin. Now, Greg Kurstin is this huge producer who has worked like with Adele and Kelly Clarkson and made some of their biggest hits, and he's in fact the guy behind all of Sia's biggest songs, from Chandelier to Cheap Thrills to Dust Till Dawn, her track with Zayn. And like, it's and basically, I mean, he's so integral to this song that he's actually been given a lead credit on it. So the track is not just credited to Sia and Diljit. I mean, it only mentions their names on the artwork, but on like streaming platforms, Greg Kurstin has been rightfully credited as a lead artist, and I think his contribution is so integral to it that it actually sounds very similar to a Sia track. And when I was just listening to it, it made me realize, I mean, I heard like Cheap Thrills and I heard Chandelier, and there's something about their beat that actually there's a similarity to like Bhangra rhythm. I mean, it's not like exactly the same, but you know, there is some kind of sonic similarity.
So it fits also with each other.
And so you could easily imagine like a Bhangra remix of a Cheap Thrills or a Chandelier. And so I think this collaboration was such a smart like combination. Now, of course, you know, looking back at the historic aspect of it, of course, like you said, you know, there has been you know, a long list of these collaborations. A lot of them came in the form of remixes, wherein you know, I don't even think the Western contributing artists maybe didn't even know what who the singer was. It was just like something that they had to do, you know, as a record company obligation. But there have been certain instances where we've seen success. Now, one of the biggest successes, of course, has been "Jai Ho" by A.R. Rahman and Pussycat Dolls, which, to my knowledge, is actually the only track by an Indian artist to. And I mean by Indian, not Indian origin, but Indian artists to have cracked the Billboard Top 15. And it hit number 15 on the Billboard Hot 100. It was, of course, successful on the back of his Oscar win for Slumdog Millionaire.
Also, movie which comes with its own power, right?
And also Pussycat Dolls also were having their own moment at that time. So that company, I mean, again, it was a very well-done remix, right? I mean, it was not like, it didn't seem like a patch on job. It was a very well-integrated tune. But again, that was a sales. There was a very different time in the music industry. This was what, 2008, 2009. I can't remember. Probably
You know,
the
to me,
Oscar was one
2008 both feels like yesterday and also many years
year.
ago. So
Yeah. So
when
I
you
think
say
this was
2008,
seven.
it does not ring a bell in any direction for
Yeah, well,
me.
you were too young to remember anyway. So so I think it was early 2009 when the movie came out in 2008. And then, you know, at that time, the charts were very different. Streaming was not a thing. So the charts were on the basis of streaming and air, I'm sorry, on sales and airplay. And this was not an airplay hit. You know, I mean, it's not like they were playing like Hindi music on American radio like they don't do even today. So it was a sales hit. So it was actually fans going out and buying this track. And I think it was also a lot of like non, you know, it wasn't a diaspora. It was probably like, you know, a wider audience going and buying this track enough
properly crossed over.
Yeah, to drive it up the charts. So, you know, that's, I think, one exception, which is kind of like the way to do it, right? It has to be it has to be a seamless, the sort of integration that happens, you know. But, you know, you worked on some of these collabs in the past, right? You have, you know, done things. And when we say international, like, I know we talked about Merena and we talked about, you know, the Kashmir track. But both of those are kind of South Asian collabs. They're kind of Indian origin artists collaborating with, you know, with Indian artists. So it's less of an international collab if we're talking in the strictest sense. But like you've done projects where, worked on projects like Biba, which had Pritham and Marshmallow, and another Rehman song where with you two called Ahimsa, right? Did you observe like a more cross-pollination of a fan base at that point of time? I mean, like, you know, were there any trends similar to Hassas? I mean, and I know we're talking really just 4 years ago, but again, just the evolution of music, and especially the, you know, how big streaming has become in that, in this 4 year period, we are actually talking about a different time.
We are actually, like, the pandemic has changed a lot in terms of adoption of music streaming. And like, like while it's 4 years ago, it was a very, very different world. But I will say one thing that has remained constant back then, and it is constant even now when you look at all of these numbers, is India is really not an emerging market. It is an emerged market. The only part of emerging is that we have not yet hit our peak. There are still a lot more Indians who are going to be coming on to streaming services. Now, with that context in mind, with Biba, for example, right? When that track kind of came out, Mello's numbers went through the roof, and like a lot of his top cities became cities in India, and he really became a lot more familiarized in this market. Of course, there were also other aspects to it, that he was coming down for Supersonic, you know, there were a lot of on-ground collaborations that were planned for him. But of course, the scale came from the digital release of Biba. But at the same time, the other way around does not happen, wherein Pritham's top cities don't become, you know, Mello's top cities.
Yeah.
And I say this not with any sense of, you know, my country greatest, my country best, but it is purely statistics, because ultimately chart numbers come down to volume, right? And when you have a substantially bigger population in this part of the world, particularly in India, they are going to skew the data far more than a smaller population sitting anywhere else, even if that market is considered to be a mature market, musically mature market, right? The other reason why I feel, at least with, and again, I think this will also probably be true with Diljit's track, and you know, you can share some more details on this, you know, in a bit. But it's the sound itself. While this one sounds as much as a Sia track, it is equally Diljit, and to me it's a little bit more Diljit, but that could just be my ears.
Ears, because I guess maybe because I've heard maybe a little bit more of Sia than I have heard, or listening to Sia for a longer time. And also, but let's not forget, I mean, one of the reasons you could be feeling this way, I mean, she sings in Punjabi on the song.
Which is the other thing, which is actually something I think a lot of fans appreciated, because like, I actually saw people commenting saying, she's actually doing a good job of pronouncing Punjabi, right? And it's not easy, you know, for like a person who has never done this before. And, but yeah, so to me, that sound itself, to me, is a little bit more Diljit. It's a little bit more Desi. So even when it's being consumed abroad, I'm not entirely sure if it is a non-Desi audience that's coming in. Like, I'm not too sure if Sia's audiences are discovering Diljit because of this track. But just as I'm saying this to you, and I'm doubting the fact that, okay, Indians are multilingual, we'll also listen to English, there will be cross-pollination, but the other way around is not necessarily true, because non-Desi people may not know Punjabi, may not know English, but they're also the same audience who are some of the biggest consumers of, you know, Latin music, right? Like reggaeton or, you know, any of the Latin genres, where obviously I don't think everyone speaks the language, but they still consume it. So therein, there is an exception over there. It just so happens that we have not yet seen that happen with, let's say, Punjabi music or Hindi music. But my question to you is, do you think it theoretically it's possible for, let's say, a Diljit to be that first Indian artist who kind of crosses over? And I give him as an example also because we're talking about the track, but he also played Coachella, right? Where we've seen videos of so many fans who were not a Desi audience. They were Coachella fans, right? Theoretically, you think it's possible?
But I will address that, but first I also want to talk about those tracks that you worked on, and I just want to follow up on the fact that they were released, they were artist original, which was Saban's Jio Saban's label at the time, right? So but they were released across platforms.
Yeah, that's usually how all of the label releases work. They're not exclusive to the streaming service.
So in that sense, I mean, I think that there's also the fact that today when we talk about a release, it's automatically considered a global release, right? It because you put it up on a DSP, and that means it's available for everybody on the planet to listen to. Everybody on the planet has access to it. But it's also the factor of discovery, which we talk about a lot. And I'm sure this track would have got good placements, like in definitely within India, on playlists, but also abroad. I mean, I don't know how far that helps, because I mean, if we talk about another recent example where there was a huge amount of promotional push, which was Badshah and J Balvin's track Hindu. Universal worked with marketing teams across the world and made sure that it was front and center, and it still didn't work. Now, of course, it could be other reasons for why that happened, but in this particular case, I think when you come down to it, you are looking at and specifically about the question of is Diljit going to be that guy? I think we have to look at two things. One is a song versus a sound breaking through. And for a song to break through, it could happen maybe through TikTok, like most songs are breaking through these days. But it has happened before. I mean, Mundia to Bachke, by Punjabi MC, and the Jay-Z, version of it specifically, did break through. It did hit the US top 40, and so again, I mean, not necessarily Indian origin artist again over there, but still a very much an Indian track, right? So in that, using an Indian's vocals. So in that case, I think that for a song to break through, it could just be a matter of, like, it could be a fluke kind of a thing. But the difference between, say, Latin music, and we've talked about this before in previous episodes, is that there's no such thing, unlike, say, even a K-pop, there's no such, or a reggaeton, there is no such thing as an umbrella Indian sound, right? I mean, we talk about how there's variations in different sounds, how,
State to
within
state,
the, yeah,
city to
state to
city.
state, within Tamil music, there are specific genres, or sounds and stuff like that. So, as such, like, we've literally seen Kutha, again,
Kutha.
Kutha songs,
Hey,
breaking through, and that's become like a thing,
listen,
right?
we
That's become a
have 20, no, 33 days left in this year, and by the end of this, we'll make sure you're able to pronounce
yeah. So
it.
anyway, so we've seen that emerge as a subgenre almost on the charts, right? So it's just too vast. I mean, and
And
with the
also, our
example,
friend Lalita explained to us that even in Kutu, there are more subgenres. There is
yeah.
Terracotta, there are like a lot of others, which
Exactly,
actually for me
terracotta.
also,
I mean,
yeah,
like,
it was quite a learning experience for me to be on that episode.
yeah, I think check out that episode, everybody, in case you haven't. And Jay Sean, okay, again, Indian origin, British Asian guy, has hit number one on the Billboard chart with Single Down with Lil Wayne, again, around this. I think that happened again in 2009, so kind of like a big year again for Indian music on the Billboard charts. But that song could very well have been, it's a completely international song. There are no overt traces of Indianness in it. On the other hand, Jay Sean's very first single to break through was Nach Tere Naal, which was a Bhangra pop song, which he did with Rishi Rich. And that peaked at number 12 in the UK, where the diaspora is so strong that the official charts company, which is their equivalent of Billboard, has had an Asian chart and a Punjabi chart for much longer than it's actually had an Afrobeats chart. So here's the thing. Everybody talks about the numbers, right? But nobody actually breaks down the data. Now, if we're saying that, if Diljit has got like a million listens in the US for this track, amongst the whatever the 20, 30 million listeners it's got overall. Who are those listeners? You know, is it primarily South Asians? Are they non-South Asians? So I definitely think that, you know, the song or sound can cross over. A song, firstly, does not even go to the sound yet, can cross over. But I think what's happening right now is we're trying so hard and constantly seeking validation, particularly from the US, that, you know, I think that we should just stop trying so hard and just let it happen in the, you know, not like force it. And besides, we've also discussed how hard it's becoming for even American acts to break through in America, you know, in this age of like, you know, viral hits, you know, and attention spans are so short and all of that stuff. And A&Rs are struggling to sort of, you know, get like a big global pop act. And in India, we don't have like this, you know, machinery, which is the K-pop industry. We don't even have like a, you know, large, like this, the Indian population is much, much smaller than the Spanish-speaking population in the US. You know, Spanish is taught in schools. It's one of the most like, you know,
You also have a lot of non-Spanish speaking people, natively Spanish speaking people learning it. You're right.
Yeah. So, you know, so there is a rudimentary understanding of the language. So it's not completely alien territory for them. So I think we keep making these apples to oranges comparisons, which do not make, you know, do not make sense at all. So I...
Yeah, but I will say this. I've seen... I know, like, for one segment of an audience, that is true. They have some familiarity with the Spanish language. But, dude, I've seen some really, really Caucasian AF people who really, really like jam to reggaeton. And, I mean, I'm there for it. But I will say this. I don't think they actually understand any aspect of it. I think it's a sound, which is again something we've discussed about why does Punjabi translate even within India, right? Like, again, there is some familiarity, that's a different thing, but it's a certain vibe, you know.
And it's a vibe, and I think that, I mean, you could also just, you know, flip that and say, why does a lot of English music connect to you know, with audiences around the world, with Indian audiences?
This
right?
is some of the Instagram channels that I follow are these, which are like almost like misheard lyrics, where you're actually listening to English music, and for the longest time I thought they were singing something else. They were evidently singing something else, and let's face it, there are times when I also don't understand English, right? And I'm sure like a lot of people will agree to that.
Yeah, and so I think it's very interesting to know, because we're no longer in the age of monoculture where, you know, you are forced to listen to something. So, you know, it's a sort of top-down thing. Now you decide what to listen to and what connects with the audience. I mean, we are seeing a certain kind of music that tends to break through into the masses, even within India, right? And typically it'll be stuff that is up-tempo.
Yeah.
You know. I mean, if sad love is the number one genre in Bollywood, then party is the number one genre for international music in India, right?
Yeah. We like to be sad in our own language, but happy in other people's languages.
Why not? And so, to answer that question, I don't know whether it's going to be Diljit who will be the guy to do it, but he's definitely going to be counted as one of the pioneers for sure. Thanks to Coachella, thanks to this collab doing particularly well in India. And I just want to wrap it up by telling you a little bit of stats about, you know, just to comparison, just to have a point of comparison to what you mentioned about Biba and Marshmello. Thanks to this song in particular, thanks to Hus Hus, Sia, who's, by the way, the 24th most listened to artist on Spotify right now, Delhi is her top city.
That's amazing.
Mumbai is her fourth. And they sandwich...
She should come to Mumbai. Don't go to Delhi. Come to Mumbai.
They sandwich Paris and Mexico City. And her top five is completed by Jakarta. And keep in mind that she's Australian. So she is truly the definition of a global artist. You know?
That is amazing.
Yeah. And for Greg Kurstin, by the way, who's rarely ever credited in a lead role as a lead artist, because, you know, they don't do that for like most Western tracks. His cities, top cities, almost mirror that of Diljit, who all of which happen to be the top three are all North Indian cities. I think Delhi, Chandigarh, Ludhiana, and then Mumbai and Jaipur. So you can tell that it's not doing, again, it's not doing for Diljit what it's doing for Sia, right? It's not really crossing him over. But on the other hand, so what might depth, I think the higher chances, like you said, of Sia getting booked for an Indian festival, music festival.
Yeah, hey, I'm maybe, also here for that.
But then again, Diljit's already been there, done that. So there you go.
That is true. And, you know, I would definitely like to see Sia. So in this instance, I'm very happy about that being the probable outcome. But yeah, to your point, in the long run, I think when you're thinking about collaborations, especially, you know, with an international artist, I think the best reason to do it is because you like something about this artist or something about their sound. And I think this is a case of that because, like you kind of pointed out, there's definitely a very authentic fit between their sounds. I also wouldn't expect that they did this collab with the expectation that Diljit could break into the US. They must have a very different strategy for that. As such, I guess he also spent so much time in Canada. So this is probably not...
Apparently he's moved to the US now, is what I
thought. Oh, he has? I did not know that. So you seem to be very aware of about his whereabouts.
No, I thought he was... I don't know. I don't know why I had to, like, I was doing my own little internal fact checking and I said that he's in Canada or something. And then I think somebody told me that
he's in the US.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, see, even things like that, you know, like that makes a lot more sense in terms of a long-term strategy. You actually spend more time on ground, you know, build a roster of collaborations. It's probably not dependent on one track, but yeah, hopefully Sia India very soon.
Supersonic, if it happens, we predicted it first.
It's like Supersonic is actually 2 months away, which actually is like 2 days away because that's how quickly time moves. But, you know, to anyone who's listening to this episode, obviously we've shared our theories on what made this track a hit. If you're listening on Spotify, we'll leave a poll right under the episode. We'd love to hear from you guys. There's also Q&A sections. So if you have more to add, please drop it in there. And if we get some interesting answers, we will totally read them out next week. And just before we sign off, and since we're talking about Sia, incredible woman, hopefully she'll come to India. A quick message to the ladies who are listening to this episode. I want to introduce you to a not-for-profit organization called Women of Music India. This is a free membership that gets you access to networking events, workshop panels, really, really all sorts of things. It's just a great community. Again, like I said, it's a free membership. I will leave the link in the description of this episode. Please check it out, and we will see you all next week.